This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick in Washington. The World Health Organization has declared 2020 the year of the nurse and midwife. They endure long shifts. They're often on their feet all day, and they're the first line of defense for many patients, and they're everywhere in the healthcare landscape. Modern nursing is a long way from the stereotype. Forget about the white apron and the hat. Today, nurses practice more and more complex medicine in a changing health system that needs their help. And in a lot of communities, when you get sick, you're just as likely these days to see a highly trained nurse as you are a doctor. Here in the studio to talk about the state of nursing today, Ernest Grant. He's president of the American Nurses Association. Welcome, Ernest.
Thank you for having me, Todd.
Dr. Grant. Ernest, it's great to have you. Joining us also from a studio at Virginia Public Media in Richmond, Virginia, Pamela Cipriano. She's the dean of the University of Virginia School of Nursing and first vice president of the International Council of Nurses. Dr. Cipriano, great to have you.
Thank you, Todd. Glad to be with you.
And we'd love to hear from you as well. Are you a nurse? What are your most common challenges or joys? How has the profession changed over the years? Tell us your story. You can comment on our Facebook page. You can tweet us at 1A, our email address, 1A@WAMU.org. Dr. Ernest Grant, let's start with a basic assessment, as they call it, a baseline assessment of what nursing is today. It's not quite what it used to be. It's nothing like it is in old movies. Nurses are practicing more and more complex medicine, as I mentioned. Give me a sense of what nursing looks like today.
Okay, thank you, Todd. First, though, if it's okay, I'd like to just begin by thanking the nurses who may be listening for their contributions to health and healthcare. As you know, we're there 24/7. We're in every setting of healthcare delivered from birth to the end of life. But obviously, with health has changed over the years. Nurses are in about 100 different specialties. And as healthcare has become more complex, that has increased the demand for nurses to specialize and to be able to meet those demands. And so the nurse that you may have thought of about 40, 50 years ago or so, that person has evolved into a nurse who is more highly trained, educated a little bit differently. We embrace innovation. We are drivers and doers of change as we see as healthcare begin to change.
You said about 100 specialties where nurses practice. Now, we all know that there are nurses in every part of the hospital and the doctor's office. That's not new. They work in the ER. They work in the OR. They work in triage. They work in the primary care office. We know that. But nurses themselves are getting more complex in the type of medicine that they practice.
Yes, they are. And also nurses are everywhere. We're not just in the acute care setting. We're in business. We're in aerospace industry. We're in research. Nurses working in those areas have helped to contribute to the change in healthcare and how we've been able to embrace what has been going on.
Now, when we hear from nurses, and we're hearing from a lot of them as we put this show on the air, when you talk about nursing in America, the word that comes to mind right away is shortage, staffing shortages, long hours, double shifts. There aren't enough nurses to go around. In some markets, it's great to be a nurse because they need you and they want to hire you and you might get paid really well. So a lot of listeners have been reaching out to us with concerns about staffing ratios between patients and nurses and burnout because of these long hours. We got this from Marty in your home state, North Carolina.
You know, there's a nursing shortage for such a long time, most of my profession, and I'm wondering why hospitals aren't looking at things more creative, four-hour shifts for discharges, for admissions, and that type of thing. Thanks.
Ernest, according to the American Association of College of Nursing, nurses comprise the largest component of the healthcare workforce, far more than doctors. Do we have enough? What's the current need versus the core of nursing in America?
No, we do not have enough. Right now, it is estimated that there by 2022, I believe, that we will be, there's a 1 million shortage of nurses that are, that are expected as nurses are beginning to retire and et cetera. So some of the ways that we're trying to meet that is to get more people to consider nursing as a profession. And also there's sort of a pipeline issue, if you will, because of people who are wanting to go, but shortages of facilities in which they can do their clinicals also a shortage of nursing faculty as well. To meet that that growing need.
What does it look like geographically? Is shortage as bad in Philly as it is in Iowa?
Yes. It depends on what part of the country that you may go to. Obviously, in the larger metropolitan cities, there may not be a shortage. But as you get out more into rural America and rural areas of different parts of the states, then there is a huge shortage.
One listener posted this on our Twitter. There is no shortage of nurses, just hospitals who don't hire enough nurses. Pamela Cipriano, what about that point of view of the amount of responsibility that hospitals are willing to give nurses?
What we see is that hospitals recognize that they will be able to provide better care and have better outcomes if they have an adequate registered nurse workforce. This is really one of the most important components as hospitals really strive to find the best equation for improving quality and safety for all patient care, as well as keeping a very robust nursing workforce. So there is debate every day in the world of hospitals in terms of how many nurses do we need? What is the right alignment of the number of patients that a nurse can take care of? More and more hospitals, though, are recognizing that an investment in their nursing workforce is the best defense and offense in terms of being able to make sure that we're taking care of patients appropriately. It always comes down to the economics. That's one of the issues that I think all of our public understands about healthcare these days. So part of why it's so important for us to be focusing on the investment of nursing is recognizing that it's not just the dollars and cents. It's making sure that we're looking at the impact that having the right sized nursing workforce in our hospitals, in all of our settings where we provide care, is providing the best patient outcomes in our communities.
Well, we're going to talk a lot more about access, expanding access in America. We're definitely going to talk about cost. Hey, dollars and cents are critical in American healthcare. What was that number I mentioned? $3.6 trillion. We're going to talk about what nurses might be able to do to help tamp down that cost, which is running away in America. But back on the nurses, Dr. Cipriano, when we talk about hiring ratios, staff ratios, you talk about burnout. There must be hospitals, clinics, offices all over America. I know there are, where there aren't enough nurses, and that means double shifts. That means 12-hour shifts. Just profession-wide, what does burnout look like in nursing? What does self-care look like in nursing? What's it like to be a nurse in an environment like that today?
Nurses do work extremely hard, and they experience stress at about twice the level of the public in terms of thinking about what happens when they go through a day at work, regardless of their setting. So we are very concerned about the fact that nurses, you know, do need to have time for renewal, need to make sure that they are supported in their work environment. So when we talk about burnout, we do start with saying, is the staffing adequate? Because when you don't have enough colleagues to do the work to adequately take care of patients, that not only is physically challenging, but it's emotionally challenging to the nurse who wants to be sure that they're doing everything they can to address the needs of a patient and a family. So when we talk about burnout in nursing, it comes in a variety of forms. Some of it is emotional exhaustion. Some of it is physical duress in terms of feeling like you just can't stop during the day to do some of the things you need to for self-care. But it's also important to recognize that burnout occurs over time. So that's why it's important that nurses are supported by their organization. We talk a lot about having a healthy work environment, which is everything from good staffing, good communication, opportunities for staff to rest and have healthy foods at their disposal, and be able to know that they are a part of the decision-making organization, that they can trust that their colleagues and organizations will make ethical decisions. So it's a whole array of activities. When those kinds of things are absent, they do contribute to burnout in nurses. And it's not just nurses that we're concerned about when we think about burnout and we think about the effect on teams today, because we know, again, healthcare is very stressful and really has significant demands.
Let me get Dr. Grannon on this before we have to take a break, because there is this tradition in medicine, or at least there used to be, long hours, hardcore workplace environment. This is the way medicine is. We're all tough. We do the hours. We don't complain. Is that changing? And are hospitals starting to take burnout more seriously in terms of their policies?
Yes, it is. And I would agree with what Dr. Cipriano has said. And also just add that we know, studies have shown that, you know, working those long hours and, you know, it has the increased potential for medication errors and things of this sort. And one of the ways that ANA, the American Nurses Association, has been addressing this this high demand is to we have a program called Healthy Nurse, Healthy Nation, which looks at five domains. That's activity, rest, nutrition, quality of life, and safety. And the idea is that we recognize that there needs to be enough quality time and enough downtime between shifts so that when a nurse does report back to work, he or she is feeling more refreshed and more alert.
Well, I know that you're for it because those are your people. Yes. Are hospital administrators down with the idea? Do they understand burnout these days?
Yes, we are finding that administrators are looking at that because obviously it benefits them in the end as well as, you know, because of the fact that you have a healthy nurse, there's less stress, less fatigue, less call-in, you know, things of these sorts. So, it does help all the way around.
We're going to talk a lot more about workplace issues in American nursing, including workplace harassment. And we're going to talk about expanding access in the American healthcare system. More and more people are getting insurance, and that means more and more we need people to provide care. And let me tell you something. They are not all doctors. Shelley from Virginia says, I've had surgeries and babies and procedures, and the nurses are always the ones I appreciate the most. The human touch, holding my hand, placing a warm blanket, telling me it's okay, means so much. I'm with Ernest Grant, American Nurses Association, and Pamela Cipriano, Dean at the University of Virginia School of Nursing. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. Welcome back to 1A. I'm Todd Zwillick. We're talking about the modern face of nursing with the president of the American Nurses Association, Ernest Grant, and Pamela Cipriano. She's dean of the University of Virginia School of Nursing and first vice president of the International Council of Nurses. And we'd love to hear from you, too. Are you a nurse? What are your biggest challenges, your biggest joys? How has your profession changed over the years if you've been cared for by a nurse? Of course you have. Tell us your story. You can comment on our Facebook page. You can tweet us at 1A. Our email address, 1A@WAMU.org. I want to talk about the culture of nursing and some of the workplace issues. We talked about burnout, but one listener says this: people think it's okay to verbally or physically abuse us. This goes for patients as well as physicians and staff. Dr. Grant, what are the workplace stresses that are particular to nurses that maybe doctors don't experience? And is this type of abuse that this listener is describing a cultural problem in nursing?
There are a number of situations in which, well, I think abuse goes across the whole healthcare setting, and all members of the healthcare team, you know, suffer that. But because the nurse is there, you know, 24/7, you know, that sometimes we perhaps get it a little bit more. There is, you know, actual, you know, hands-on, you know, striking and et cetera, or there's the verbal abuse as well. And but there's no place for that. And a number of states have passed laws that makes it a felony to strike a member of the healthcare team, you know, in that particular situation. And the main thing is calling it out, you know, letting the individuals know that this will not be tolerated. And, of course, being supported by their organization when they are taking a stand.
Now, Vanderbilt University, 2017, Vanderbilt Medical Center found that 60% of new nurses left their jobs within 6 months. Due to bullying? That is an astronomical result. Is that true?
There is a history of, I guess you could say, bullying, you know, that does occur. And one of the things that we're trying to do is to change that, you know, by giving new graduates tools that they need and to try to change the environment, you know, to make it a situation where it is not tolerated. And again, it involves working with the organization and other members of the healthcare team to ensure that everyone is treated with civility and not incivility.
Dr. Cipriano, has this changed in healthcare and in medicine? My father is a practicing physician for 45 years. My grandfather, too. And I was never a doctor, but I certainly observed this industry close up my whole life. There used to be a culture of God doctors who roamed the hospital. Their word was law, and bullying wasn't called bullying. It was called obeying the doctor. Has that culture changed?
That has definitely changed. And as we look at the fact that more and more individuals who are part of the healthcare team, nurses in particular, have more education, they expect to be more involved and have more respect. But I think the old-fashioned, doctor as captain of the ship, and as you described it, really has gone away because there is an appreciation for the knowledge and skills that all the healthcare team members bring, and particularly nurses. But what has happened, though, in our environments is that I believe a lot of the reaction to the high stress and the high stakes has been that sometimes people are not as able to manage their anger, or they may be trying to deal with their own situation that sometimes has them lash out. We also know that one of the big changes that's occurred in our society is that people bring their problems to work. It used to be that you kept things at home or you managed them in a different way. Now, because we have multi-generations in our workforce and we have 24/7 communication with our families and with other people, it's really impossible to take some of these conflicts out of the workplace, which really does require that our employers take a very active role in setting policies, in implementing requirements such as the work that the American Nurses Association has done to be able to say it's important, as you heard Ernest mention, that we work together to make sure that staff and employers and professionals all understand the limitations and that there is a zero tolerance for any violence, incivility, or bullying. Now, we do see some violence coming from the public. And once again, organizations have to have measures in place to prevent those kinds of things from happening and have no tolerance. So, yes, there's been a change, both in terms of the professional relationships, but also some of the stress reactions that we see on the part of everyone who enters the doors of a healthcare facility.
There is a part of the culture of medicine as well that I think permeates this culture. Doctors, by a lot of the public, tend not to be very trusted. They don't know what they're talking about, right? That's almost like a cultural truism. It helps fuel the snake oil industry. Doctors and medical authorities don't know what they're talking about. Buy my product. It'll help you live forever. This, by the way, I bring it up, it does not apply to nurses, Dr. Grant. For the 18th year in a row, you'll like this, a Gallup poll reported that nurses are ranked the most trusted profession in America. Those are Walter Cronkite numbers. I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yes, it is. And we're extremely excited and pleased to have the confidence of the public.
I know that you are, but the question then becomes whether healthcare systems and hospitals capitalize on this trust, meaning are they putting nurses forward if they know that patients and insurance members love nurses, maybe not as much doctors, push the nurses forward and you might have more customer satisfaction?
Well, part of that is that we're all in this together. Obviously, working, nurses need to be in better positions of leadership, perhaps. There's studies that have shown that for hospital boards and et cetera, nurses only make up about 5% of those boards. And one of the things that we'd like to do is to see, invite healthcare facilities to put more nurses on their boards, to have that input and to get the idea of, what could be done perhaps to improve the healthcare situation. Since we're that close to the patient, patients should be asking about their nurse. Do I have a what is the training that my nurse has had, or who is my nurse, and et cetera. And by doing that, we're able to again use that pipeline to drive some changes at various healthcare organizations.
Now, 2020 is the International Year of the Nurse, as I mentioned. It is also the International Year of the Midwife. Kristen wrote on our Facebook page, both of my son's births were with midwives, and both experiences move me to tears. I will hear my midwife's voice in my head for as long as I live. Incredibly supportive and empowering, totally amazing women who were on it. We heard from a lot of listeners with experiences like this. One listener said, midwives delivered both of my children as the doctor was hanging out in the back of the room. All natural, with ease, and the midwife was coaching me all the way through it. And we heard this from Emily, who's a nurse midwife from Salt Lake City in Utah.
Don't forget that the World Health Organization designated 2020 not just the year of the nurse, but the year of the nurse and midwife. It's important, and it's time, that the U.S. get on board with the midwifery model of care as the gold standard for women's health. I'd like to hear more from 1A about the role midwives play in our healthcare system.
Well, you got it, Emily. Dr. Cipriano, is America on board with midwifery?
The U.S. is not as far advanced as many other countries in terms of recognizing the amazing contribution and full range of women's health care that midwives provide. So in the United States, we have both certified nurse midwives that requires graduate education and credentialing. And so those are the individuals that are part of the professional nursing workforce. We also have other midwives that are not registered nurses, which is typically the case in many other countries around the world. And so we support the nurse who spoke on your program from Salt Lake City, because we know how critical it is to have highly educated nurses who are part of that women's health continuum. Again, not that they do a lot more than just deliver babies. So I do believe that the United States can learn from other countries to really recognize that building out the nurse midwifery workforce is an important step to be able to look at all of women's health and be able to address some of the challenges that we see today with maternal mortality in particular. And as Ernest said before, this really is a team effort. All of healthcare is delivered in teams. And that's true whether you have the bedside nurse in the hospital setting or a nurse midwife or a midwife, where we really look at making sure that everyone who interacts with that patient and family is the right person at the time in the right place with the right skills and knowledge.
What is the state of insurance coverage, however, for midwife deliveries or midwife-assisted deliveries? Because it's great to have the midwives. If insurance isn't paying, then it's not spreading.
Well, that's a question I don't know the exact answer to. In most situations, when any of the healthcare providers is associated with an organization, a birthing center or a hospital or a practice, then usually they are included under the umbrella of funding. I have not heard that as a barrier to using midwives in the United States.
Matt wrote on our Twitter, "Nurses are the direct daily provider for care for all patients. Doctors come in, assess, they leave. Trusting nurses to do the actual care. A good doctor always involves the nurse in providing joint care to a patient." Dr. Grant, I guess that's always been true. Certainly, healthcare and medicine have always been a team approach, even if it wasn't explicitly discussed that way. What about the culture of doctors and how they approach nurses? Tell me how doctors are viewing their responsibilities and the team effort now versus maybe 20 years ago.
I think doctors are viewing it as more of a collaboration. We would like that model. We are all part of the healthcare team. When a patient comes into a hospital, obviously, as I mentioned earlier, it is the nurse that is there 24/7. It is the nurse who will advocate on behalf of that patient. And as part of the healthcare team, it is that's one of the ways that the nurse is going to be able to express the concerns, the stress, things like that that the patient may be going through, particularly if it's someone from a different culture. Maybe this is their first time being hospitalized, first time interacting with Western medicine and et cetera. So having that trust that they have developed with the nurse, they expect that nurse will take that trust and share that with the team, and together, working with the patient, come up with a plan of care that would be beneficial for everyone all the way around.
Now, Dr. Cipriano, back on the issue of midwives, I want to make sure I don't forget. I mean, you said that the United States is lagging pretty significantly behind the rest of the world in its use of midwives. Clue me in on the rest of the world and how important midwife practice is in places that don't have this weird idiosyncratic healthcare system like the one we have in America.
Yeah, Todd. In many countries, the midwife or the nurse midwife may be the sole practitioner providing health services in a community, particularly rural communities. And so they become not only the individual that tends to the deliveries that are occurring, but they're really looking out for the whole range of women's health care, and that spills over into families' health care. So when we look at the education of nurses in other countries, sometimes they will come out with the title of nurse and midwife, and then in many other regions, particularly in continents like Africa and some of the Asian nations, individuals are educated specifically to be midwives. And again, there is certainly some overlap and crossover in the role of nurse and midwife. But in countries that we look to that may not have the well-developed high-tech systems as we do in the United States, we find that there's a much more robust midwife workforce because they are really trusted in their communities. They are known to their communities, and they also have the connections if they do need to refer someone to another healthcare provider, that will happen. But they are very significant players in terms of the whole range of women's healthcare deliveries and care of families.
The most important data point here is maternal mortality and infant mortality when a child is born in this country or any other country. What do we know about the connection, the correlation between quality midwife care, let's say in other countries, and numbers of maternal and infant mortality?
Well, we're very concerned in the United States that we have a high rate of maternal mortality, one of the worst performances in the highly developed and high-income countries that the United States considers as our peer group. The reasons for that are sometimes elusive, and it's incredible that many other countries, again, that don't have the same resources that we do in the United States, are experiencing much lower rates. I believe that one of the key ingredients is the follow-up that's provided to women after they deliver their babies. In the U.S., over the last several decades, we have been doing less in terms of home visits and follow-up, which I believe is, again, one of the hallmarks of care that is typically provided by midwives. So I think there are lessons learned from other countries and the workforce that they utilize. At the same time, we have many, many organizations, hospitals, practice groups that include physicians, nurses, midwives, and others, really trying to take a very close look at how can we address this really serious issue in the United States.
It is remarkable when you step back from the hard numbers a little bit. You look at high-tech hospitals, high-tech births, high technology in America, high-dollar care. And it does not translate to healthier moms and healthier babies, living moms and living babies, when you compare us to comparable countries. A lot of Americans don't know that. And when they find out, Dr. Cipriano, it's often shocking.
Absolutely, because we do want to believe and in many cases can claim that we have the best health care in the world. But this is one of those difficult situations where we have really not delivered, no pun intended, on the outcomes that we need for all of our women that are delivering babies. And we are particularly concerned, too, that those of lower economic status, which often means it is our underserved populations and minority groups, are experiencing the highest rates of maternal deaths. And that is just not acceptable.
Dr. Ernest Grant, I want to talk about you for just a moment, if you don't mind. You are president of the American Nurses Association. It wasn't always so. You told me when we were chatting before the show, 36 years in nursing practice. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely.
That's quite a career. Tell me a little bit about your practice.
I was a burn nurse working at a major university burn care facility, and it was a very challenging job, one of the best jobs that I've ever had, and I think that's why people go into to nursing, is that they want to be able to help people. And I saw that I was able to make a difference every day when I went home, whether I was helping someone to recover from a devastating burn injury or to help them transition from this life to the next. Every day was an adventure. It was a challenge, and I would do it all again, without hesitation.
This is a big question that I don't know if you can get your head around. Maybe it's unfair. Working in burn care for 36 years, it seems like there would be a huge emotional toll to what you've seen and who you've had to care for.
True. And fortunately, we had in place a system where, we would either have, critical incident, stress relief management when something like that happened, or we would also, do various things with our colleagues, because nobody understood what you went through other than, someone who shared it with you.
36 and a half years in practice before becoming president of the American Nurses Association. Dustin emailed this. People used to become a nurse to take care of patients in the traditional sense. Now they become an RN. They get their BSN as a stepping stone to advancement. Nursing may have evolved, but we still need competent, dedicated nurses to care for patients at the bedside. We're talking about the role of nursing in a year where healthcare remains a major political debate. More from our guests and from you in just a moment. I'm Todd Zwillick. You're listening to 1A. No, I'm never gonna let you down. We're talking about the modern face of nursing with the president of the American Nurses Association, Ernest Grant, and the dean of the University of Virginia School of Nursing, Pamela Cipriano. Dr. Grant, the Affordable Care Act, still controversial, of course, but one thing that it did was vastly and quickly expand the number of people with basic health coverage. But then the question is, where do all these newly covered people get their basic care? Can you talk about nursing and how it fits into this access question that we confront ourselves with as we expand the amount of insurance in this country?
Well, one of the things that the ANA has always been advocating is, of course, access to care. And one of the ways to do that is obviously through the use of the advanced practice registered nurse or nurse practitioners, as the public may be very well aware of that name. There are 22 states currently in the United States that allow what we call full practice authority, that allows these individuals to go out into rural underserved areas of the country and to provide care that perhaps otherwise may not be accessed. Sometimes I know in my state of home state of North Carolina, with closures or some small rural access or critical access hospitals, that means now that in order for a patient to be able to get health care, they may have to drive an additional 60 to 80 miles. But by placing APRNs in those rural areas, then hopefully we're able to reduce that stress on the patient. They become part of the community and are able to understand all the stresses and things that the individual may go to, and therefore they're able to get adequate health care.
Now, is primary care the place where medical need is greatest now, the basic care? I mean, preventive care that keeps you from having to go to see a specialist when you get really sick.
Yes.
That's the place where the need is the greatest.
Yes, that is one of the places that it is greatest, of course.
Now, what about cost? I mean, Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, for some of its virtues, it expanded access to health coverage, did basically nothing to control costs. They still continue to rise, $3.6 trillion, 18% of the economy. The ACA did nothing to help this. In fact, it made it a bit worse in some cases. Where do you see the intersection of cost and basic care when nurses are involved?
When nurses are involved, one of the things that we can do is drive down that cost, helping to, because nurses are very resourceful and, being able to look at, is there a cheaper way or is there another form of medication or something else perhaps that we could do to help reduce the overall cost that may be there. And that is has been one driving point of the American Nurses Association, is to make sure that not only access, but also that it is good quality care and, of course, low costs at all means.
Pamela Cipriano, Dr. Grant mentioned rural access clinics where nurses staff up a lot of the healthcare with expanding access now. But in the city and in suburban areas, there are a lot of retail clinics popping up in places like Walgreens and CVS. Many of these are staffed by nurse practitioners. What's your angle on this trend?
It's been a very interesting trend and has a couple different names, either retail care or convenience care. And you're absolutely right, Todd. These are almost exclusively staffed by nurse practitioners, which is a great example of the fact that when we have less acute conditions, most of the public can actually get care very quickly and economically in these kinds of settings. Going back to the designation by the World Health Organization of 2020 as the year of the nurse and midwife, their ultimate goal is to message governments around the world that universal health coverage, meaning access to essential care, must be the standard around the world. And their whole pitch, if you will, is that nurses are the ingredient and the solution to making that happen. So retail clinics are an important part of our addressing that in the United States. But even more so, as Ernest was speaking, nurses, again, can provide a variety of primary care, both in practices with physicians and nurse practitioners, or as solo practitioners, or in conjunction with retail clinics and things like that, so that the public has choices and actually can get care that is for the more simplistic kinds of illnesses, whether it's a virus or whether it's an ear infection in a child or just a concern about a GI condition, in addition to preventive care, making sure immunizations are up to date, being able to understand, you know, kind of what, you know, what might be happening in someone's recovery from an illness. So it all works across a continuum. And ultimately, what we're finding is that that insurance companies are recognizing that that's an important piece of the puzzle, that not to be exclusive to the traditional doctor's office as the only place where we can really impact care and health.
I mean, Walgreens, CVS, Walmart, these are big corporations who seem to think that there's a value proposition of providing expanded access and less expensive care that somebody will pay for. I mean, they're doing it because they see the potential for profit there. Dr. Cipriano, do we have any good data on the direct connection between nurse practitioner care in settings like this and overall cost to the system, what it costs all of us to get our care?
Well, what we know is that nurse practitioners have been studied in a variety of settings, not necessarily just in the retail setting. But overall, they have tended to demonstrate that they can provide equal or better outcomes and very high patient satisfaction for a slightly lower cost. So again, it really is going to depend on the particular marketplace, but recognizing that nurse practitioners are able to provide a whole range of services that complement or are consistent with some of the very same medical care. One of the things that people might not know is that in terms of how the government pays for care, you can have the exact same services provided by a nurse practitioner that are provided by a physician. But in many cases, the nurse practitioner payment is only at 85% of what the physician is paid. So there's already a spending differential, if you will, on the part of the government. And so I think it demonstrates that there are different models that can be proven that nurse practitioner care, which is a very high quality, can be less expensive. And again, as you've heard, you know, many times, nurse practitioners are the only individuals in a community. It could be a very intense inner city community as well as a rural community.
Ernest Grant, the nurses' associations and unions used to have terrible turf battles with the AMA and doctors' groups fighting to keep nurses from encroaching on their practice, or just access issues as policies change. Everybody wants access to the patients, and everybody wants access to the money. Are those fights still as terrible as they used to be? Do they still go on?
I think they still go on to a certain extent, but I think far less. We are, again, using more of a collaborative model. And as more states, as I mentioned, opened up, you know, for the advanced practice nurse to be able to practice to their full practice authority at their, you know, given their educational level, we're seeing those arguments, you know, dwindle a little bit.
Have they dwindled among the lobbyists? I may be among all of you on the healthcare team. I get it. But what about the lobbyists who get paid, you know, to secure the big dollars from Medicare and from healthcare policy?
No, I don't think that they have dwindled among the lobbyists. That's been part of the reason, I guess, that we do not have the full practice authority in all 50 states. You know, it is a huge issue that, you know, we're working on, obviously in collaboration with our physician colleagues. And, you know, the bottom line is, does the patient get the right care that they need? That's the most important thing.
I want to read you this tweet, stepping back in the hour just a little bit. Hannah tweeted this: I've been a nurse for the past 11 years. I would disagree with the statement that you made, Todd, that the culture of the God doctor has changed. It's improved historically, but it is absolutely still alive and well. Not changed everywhere, I guess.
Perhaps not.
Perhaps not. Not according to Hannah, who's an experienced nurse. Pamela Cipriano, we've been talking about basic care in basic clinics, communities, rural and city, CVS's, Walgreens and Walmart's and such. But the spread of the highly trained nurse is not just in basic care. In a lot of hospitals, highly trained nurse anesthetists provide most of the anesthesia in the operating room these days. That takes years and years of training. It's highly skilled. Is this just about saving money? What's this trend about?
Not at all. Any advanced practice nurse role, and the certified registered nurse anesthetist, the CRNA, is one of those. And so, again, as we recognize that not all care that comes under the umbrella of medical and health care needs to be provided by physicians. And so what we find is that nurse anesthetists are highly skilled, very well educated, and able to provide a very wide range of anesthesia care. Because as you think about the number of and kinds of different procedures and interventions that we do for people of all ages, some are very simple. We've been able to use technology to make them less invasive, so they require much shorter durations of anesthesia. Where everyone used to have general anesthesia, we have opportunities to just locally numb an area, or we also are able to have very light anesthesia that someone is what we would still call, quote, asleep for a very short period of time. That includes procedure areas where we might be doing a colonoscopy or something like that. So what we've been able to see and realize with physician colleagues in anesthesia is that there is a range that really allows for this highly educated and skilled clinician, CRNA, to be able to provide those services. So that's really a great example of looking at how we are able to spread the availability of care across a lot of settings, highly complex hospitals, outpatient surgery centers and procedure areas, and more rural practices where all of these services are needed.
Pamela Jordan asks this: what are the areas of medicine that you see nurses moving into in the next decade besides nurse practitioner? Do you see any transient role emerging on the spectrum between doctors and nurses?
We know that the advanced practice roles that we have now are highly flexible and I believe will continue to evolve. So when we talk about the nurse practitioner, the certified registered nurse anesthetist, the certified nurse midwife, and the clinical nurse specialist, these are all highly educated nurses. So they all have some type of graduate degree, either a master's or doctoral degree. And I believe it is across those specialties that we will continue to see nurses in unique roles. As you think about the evolution of application of genomics knowledge, and we think about the use of artificial intelligence, all of these are areas that nurses are doing research. They're working in teams to look at how do we personalize the care? How do we begin to predict how we can improve health of populations? Nurses are front and center in that work as well. And they also are participating in teams that are beginning to shape the delivery of care and services in ways that may not be apparent to the public, which is why we know it's so important to expand the understanding and definition and association that people have had with the traditional nursing role, to recognize that nurses are also here providing cutting-edge interpretation of how we use science and technology to advance all healthcare and provide that very personalized touch as well.
Ernest Grant, you are the first male president of the American Nurses Association, another stereotype busted that nurses are all women, of course. Only the third African-American to hold the role at the top of the American Nurses Association. What does that mean to you?
That means that times have changed, that, you know, we have been embraced by our colleagues. And I recognize that I stand on the shoulders of giants, of individuals who have blazed a pathway for me. But when I was elected, you know, I was elected because of my qualification, and that you know, have the full support of, you know, everyone who is a member of the American Nurses Association to, you know, to do the job.
Well, Pamela Cipriano, big picture, I've talked about cost a lot. It's so important. 18% of the GDP of this country spent on healthcare, $3.6 trillion at last estimate. Cost per capita about twice in this country than they are in any comparable country without better health outcomes. You mentioned child and mother mortality. What's the data? Are nurses going to save us money? Are nurses going to help get us out of the spending crisis?
We're in an evolution, and I believe that it is the better utilization and full utilization of nurses that can help us along this journey. We can't automatically say if we only hired just nurses and we stopped using some of the physicians that we would have a solution. It's really looking at how do we provide that right care in the right place with the right providers? How do we also help the public understand that sometimes spending more, doing more is not helpful to either their condition or their quality of life? And those are the kinds of conversations that nurses in leadership positions are involved in every day. So we all have to take a step back and, again, look at the fact that we want nurses to be able to influence the changes in healthcare that can have a dramatic effect on not just the better life that people will endure, but also the whole economic picture for the U.S. Because you're absolutely right. We continue to spend at a rate much higher than other countries. And we have to be more careful in terms of the kind of care that we're providing and saying, is it giving us the outcomes we want? Are we really seeing the cause and effect? Are we really giving the care that's necessary? And that does require the interplay between individuals like nurses who are looking very holistically at the impact on individuals. Not just are we getting the clinical outcome, but are we bankrupting families because they're pursuing very expensive treatment that has no efficacy? So really looking at the whole individual and family and looking at the impact of what is their illness, how is their illness affecting them? How is the care that's being prescribed helping them? How can we also, as nurses, really look at the kinds of interventions that are necessary on a social and emotional basis as well as clinical basis to help people best utilize health care and also, you know, recover or regain a quality of life that's important to
them?
Well,
it's just about time for us to go, but I'll give the last word to Andrew, who emailed, "I'm a retired physician. I haven't heard anyone mention the important role of nurses' contributions to the training of physicians. Three nurses stand out in my memory to making significant contributions to my development." That's a good way to end the hour. Ernest Grant, president of the American Nurses Association. Pamela Cipriano, dean of the University of Virginia School of Nursing. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Remember, you can connect with us about upcoming episodes and debates online at the1a.org. Click on Ask 1A. This show was produced by Michelle Harvin. To learn more about her and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington. I'm Todd Zwillick. It's 1A.